our allies in the fight for affordable health care.
I'm Andy Seaton, KBOO News.
For KBOO in Portland, I'm Julie Sabatier.
KBOO's Afifa Ahmed Shafi reports.
I'm Stephanie Potter, KBOO News.
KBOO's Eduardo Villanderos Fiere has more.
I'm Annalisa Hummel.
And I'm Liam Delta.
This is Maddie Bowden.
I'm Alex Collins, KBOO News.
I'm Michael Newland, KBOO News.
I'm Courtney Dillard, KBOO News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, former Enron CEO Jeffrey Skilling is sentenced to 24 years in prison for his role in a corporate fraud that destroyed the company. The Israeli government admits to using phosphorus weapons in its attack on Lebanon this past summer, and the mayors of 320 cities embraced the Kyoto Accord and set targets to reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
And in the human cost of occupation in Iraq, The Lancet reported recently that 655,000 Iraqi civilians have died due to the U.S. invasion and occupation. As of today, 2,800 American soldiers and 146 American contractors have died. As of today, there have been 20,687 American soldiers wounded. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, October 23rd, 2006. 15 days until the 2006 midterm elections. I'm Mike Monkvold.
And I'm Andy Seaton. Antagonism towards Spanish-language campaign ads is brewing in Oregon's midterm elections. KBOO's Lisa Loving has the story.
Elections observers are taking note this week of the fact that no Oregon candidates are airing advertisements in Spanish. During the 2002 and 2004 election seasons, Spanish language ads were quite common. This year, on the other hand, attack ads against Spanish-speaking Oregon residents have become common, as political candidates portray themselves as hard on immigration. Bart Marquez, the coordinator of Voz Hispana, a Woodburn-based nonprofit that promotes civic participation by Latinos, says if candidates translated their current ads into Spanish, it would not win Spanish-speaking voters. That's because so many ads from both political parties are demonizing immigrants, Marquez said. About 4% of total eligible voters in the state are Latino. Governor Ted Kulongoski has given interviews on Spanish-language TV, but neither he nor his main competitor, Ron Saxton, has placed any ads on any Spanish-language television or radio stations. The same is true in the congressional race between Democrat incumbent Darlene Hooley and Republican challenger Mike Erickson, even though the district they're vying for includes Woodburn, where more than half the registered voters are Latino. For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
A man who beat a stranger's dog was sentenced to 2 years probation today and fined $2,000. That's after his earlier plea of no contest to a felony charge of aggravated animal abuse. Anthony Garrison of Hillsboro can't have contact with pets during his probation and must undergo anger management counseling, Washington County Judge Stephen L. Price said. Garrison also can't own a pet for 5 years. Garrison was charged with hitting Shiloh, a 3-year-old shepherd, on the face and head while owner Siegfried Berg was walking her and another dog on July 11th. The dog needed extensive dental surgery. Garrison said in court that he acted in self-defense because Shiloh bit him on the leg, but police found no such evidence. Moreover, Garrison had gone to his house to get a cane and then ran 6 blocks to catch up with the dogs.
A Corvallis biotech lab has developed what they say is the first ever drug to show 100% protection against the smallpox virus. Smallpox is a disease that was eradicated decades ago, but smallpox is considered one of the top biowarfare threats today. And this new drug, a company official say, would wipe out that threat. Company officials say the drug promises to safeguard the population from a smallpox biowarfare attack. Researchers hope to submit the new drug application for approval by the Food and Drug Administration in early 2009.
The Oregon Coast Aquarium in Newport has released 7 common mirrors after having been rehabilitated by aquarium aviculturists. The birds were found on the beach this summer as chicks separated from their parents. The aquarium staff raised the young mirrors to the age when they can fly and dive underwater for fish on their own. Normally, at about 3 or 4 weeks of age, mirror chicks jump from their nest rocks at Yakina Head. They are taken offshore by their male parent, who finishes raising them at sea. If the parent and chick become separated and can't find each other, the young chick cannot survive on its own. Last week, aquarium officials climbed onto the jetty to release the birds. They looked through binoculars as the birds flew a short distance and began diving. Experts say it's a very good sign.
Current time is 5:05:41. You're listening to Community Radio KBOO in Portland, Vancouver, Corvallis, and Hood River. We ask you to become a member of KBOO Community Radio. And please do that by calling 503-232-8818 or 877-500-KBOO. And now we'll go into Membership Central.
We'd like you to get on the phone right away and call 503-232-8818. Or if you live outside the City of Roses, 1-877-500-KBOO. And I also am joined back in Membership Central with another great friend of mine. Introduce yourself.
Well, great friend by name of Bill. Hi. One of the things I wanted to say about KBOO while you're listening to the break before we go back to the news is that KBOO is a community training center. And this occurs to me because we are surrounded here by young folks coming to visit, getting a sense of what it is here at KBOO that we do, what it looks like. And one of the things that we do is we do these tours. We bring in the community, and indeed we also train community members to do the kind of stuff that you're hearing on the news. And that's part of our mission. And in order to support our mission, we need you. We need you calling 503-232-8818. That's for the local folks. And for the folks from out of town, 1-877-500-5266. Because without your money, we can't do what we've been doing for over 30 years now.
Exactly. I mean, you could come down for yourself in person and see exactly what makes this a great living room more than just a community radio station back here at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. We're at the Robin Egg Blue Building right behind the Juniper Hotel, just a half a block south of Burnside. So 8th and Burnside, come on down and see us. And all those little kids, it looks like they're just taking a nice tour through the facility right now, and we could provide you with a great tour of exactly what we have to offer, too. We could treat you with a cup of coffee, give you a free bumper sticker, and so come on down to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue and just half a block south of Burnside and see for yourself. Or otherwise, call 503-232-8818.
Or from out of town, 1-877-500-5266. And if you're listening on the web at kboo.fm, remember to click on Join Now and join us as part of the KBOO community. We can't do it without you. We need your help. There's no getting around that. And actually, we are entirely happy to be dependent upon our listeners because it makes for an entirely different listening experience. We have the most diverse programming and the most diverse programmers here at KBOO. And it is because it is a community-driven, volunteer-staffed radio station. Our news people are volunteers, except for our AM and PM news directors. Our entire operation, I am a volunteer. You know, it's just done by people coming in because they love what KBOO does, and they want to keep it going. 503-232-8818 is how you can keep us going. Oh, 1-877-500-5266. If you are out of town, please get the phones ringing to support the news, to support KBOO, support community radio.
We'll be returning to your Doogie Bavlova newscast in roughly 6 minutes or so. But first of all, we thought we'd provide you with some opportunities, you know, great, you know, gifts, you know, if you would like to make a pledge. For instance, for a $60 minimum pledge, you can get a Kinky Friedman bumper sticker or a lawn sign. As you may know, Kinky Friedman is has, you know, continuously defined himself by political incorrectness all throughout his career. He was part of a band in the 60s called Kinky Friedman and the Texas Jew Boys. In the 70s, he went on to create all kinds of detective mystery novels and such. He was also in the Peace Corps in Bosnia, where actually he was coined for introducing the Frisbee to the natives there, and he said that they had a funny smile when they put it up like a lip. So anyway, Texas Kiki Friedman is now running for governor of Texas, which is trying to, you know, invent himself once again in his great, impressive resume. And anyway, for a $60 minimum pledge, you can get a Kiki Friedman bumper sticker or a lawn sign. And that could be yours by calling 503-232-8818. And making that proclamation that, indeed, you want to support community radio. You want to support that megaphone that the community, you know, doesn't have that clear channel. That clear channel can't provide to the community.
Right. Because we are the radio station of the under and unrepresented communities around. And that's the way we do it, because we bring in people. People come to us. They get training. They become the voices of their own community and the voice of the larger community. 503-232-8818 is the place to do it. And by the way, in terms of thank you gifts, I might mention our classic KBOO versus the MediaZillas T-shirt. That's available for a $75 pledge. That's $6 and... what, 25 cents a month if you want to do it by electronic funds transfer. That's practically nothing. That's less than minimum wage for an hour. 1-877-500-5266 is the other number if you happen to be anywhere in North America or except Mexico. Okay, Canada and United States. So give us a call. And soon we will be tracking on back to the news. One more time with the phone numbers.
503-232-8818. And if you live outside the Portland metropolitan area, it's toll-free at 1-877-500-KBOO. And now, as promised, back to the newscast.
Thousands of jobs and billions of dollars were lost when the Texas energy company Enron collapsed. Today, one of the key players was in the courtroom to hear his sentence for his role in the scandal. Free Speech Radio News' Renee Feltz reports from Houston.
Former Enron CEO Jeff Skilling was convicted in May of 19 counts of fraud, conspiracy, insider trading, and repeatedly lying to auditors about the company's financial health. This afternoon, he was sentenced to 24 years and 4 months in prison for his crimes. Before the judge handed down his decision, about 10 of the roughly 9,000 employees who lost their jobs and pensions made statements about how the scandal hurt them. One, who was employed 18 years with the company, told the court she went bankrupt when she lost over $500,000 in Enron stock and won't be able to retire when she turns 65 next month. Today, 52-year-old Skilling told the judge he had remorse over what happened to Enron, but maintained his innocence. His sentence is the longest of all the Enron defendants, most of whom admitted guilt in government plea bargains. Skilling's lawyers plan to appeal. It's unclear when federal authorities will order him to report to prison, but the judge said he won't remain free during an appeal. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Renee Feltz in Houston.
The brother of professional football player turned Army Ranger Pat Tillman is speaking out against the war in Iraq. Pat Tillman was killed in Afghanistan in 2004. His brother, Kevin Tillman, has written a scathing indictment of the war in Iraq, calling it an illegal invasion. The two brothers enlisted together in response to the 9/11 terrorist attacks. In an article on the web magazine TruthDig.com, Kevin sharply criticized the invasion of Iraq, the indefinite imprisonment of terrorism suspects, and other events. After playing for Arizona State University, Pat Tillman was drafted by the Arizona Cardinals in 1998. He played with the team for 4 years, and he was on the verge of signing another contract with the Cardinals in 2002 when he decided to join the Army instead.
In the fight against global warming, 320 mayors of U.S. cities have joined 164 nations in embracing the Kyoto Accord and setting targets that will lead to reduced greenhouse gas emissions by 2012. Seattle Mayor Greg Nickels has said that even if the federal government did nothing to clean up its act, U.S. mayors could make a difference. On the day in 2005 when the Kyoto Protocol became law around the world, except in the U.S. and Australia, Nickels launched the Climate Protection Initiative and urged heads of other cities to join Seattle in pledging to meet or beat the Kyoto standards by reducing their heat-trapping gas emissions 7% from 1990 levels by 2012.
A Democratic takeover on Capitol Hill would be good news to those who say government should prohibit telecommunication giants from playing favorites on the Internet. The idea known as network neutrality is about preventing telecommunication companies from taking control over the Internet. Proponents say it should be a bipartisan issue. But corporate lobbyists are worried that the Democrats might pick up seats they need to take over one or both chambers of Congress, and push the net neutrality issue. Regardless of the election's outcome, net neutrality legislation would still have to be signed by President Bush, something that both sides acknowledge is unlikely to happen.
New research in Chile helps explain how soy may contribute to heart health through a process scientists refer to as decreased platelet aggregation. By reducing the density of the platelet receptors, a natural component in soy called isoflavones may contribute to a reduced risk of blood clotting, which in turn decreases the risk of heart attacks and strokes. These findings create a more nuanced understanding of the American Heart Association Nutrition Committee's recent statement in their journal Circulation that downplay the degree to which soy can help reduce cholesterol, pointing to a more modest benefit than previously thought. However, by linking soy's isoflavones to reduce a platelet aggregation, a new study suggests the need for scientists to examine a variety of heart health factors, including, but not limited to, cholesterol, in order to gain a thorough understanding of the ways in which soy may contribute to heart health.
An explosion today in eastern Pennsylvania coal mine killed at least one. The blast happened at the R&D Coal Company anthracite mine in Schuylkill County, about 80 miles northwest of Philadelphia. Eastern Pennsylvania has the nation's only deposits of anthracite, a type of hard, relatively clean-burning coal that once heated millions of homes, but now represents only a tiny sliver of the U.S. coal industry. The mines are still operating, are typically small, with only a few miners.
According to Sunday editorials in Missouri and Tennessee, Democratic challengers to the Senate should win. According to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Republican Senate incumbent Steve Talent is a dead heat, quote unquote, against Democrats against Democratic challenger and state auditor Claire McCaskill. Although Mr. Talent has a well-funded campaign, he has stuck with President Bush and his low poll numbers regarding Iraq. Meanwhile, McCaskill supports troop withdrawal from Iraq and health care access for Americans. In the Memphis Commercial Appeal, the editors endorse Representative Harold Ford Jr. for Tennessee's open U.S. Senate seat instead of Republican and former Chattanooga Mayor Bob Corker. Citing Ford's, quote, encyclopedic knowledge, end quote, of issues ranging from the war in Iraq to the economy and his ability to understand the issues.
The House Ethics Committee Monday questioned the top aide of House Speaker Dennis Hastert in an attempt to clarify whether early warnings about ex-Representative Mark Foley were ignored. Hastert's chief of staff, Scott Palmer, has disputed the statements that he was told about Foley's Foley's top aide in 2002 or 2003 about inappropriate computer message come-ons to mail pages. Hastert has released an internal report that said his aides first learned about Foley's inappropriate contact in the fall of 2005. The panel is looking into whether lawmakers and staff aides should have done more to prevent Foley from having inappropriate interactions with pages. The known problems date back to as far as 2001 or 2002. It is unclear whether the panel will have enough time to issue a report before Election Day.
One in five Americans believes the United States is winning the war in Iraq, half the number that thought so last December. About the same number, 18%, believe insurgents are winning. But the majority, 60%, say no one is winning in Iraq. In the poll of 1,013 adult Americans interviewed by telephone, two-thirds, or 64%, of those polled oppose the war in Iraq. A majority, 57%, want the United States to announce it will pull all troops by a certain date. The Bush administration argues against setting such a timetable, saying it would embolden the enemy.
President Bush has decided not to use the phrase, quote, stay the course, unquote, anymore to describe his Iraq policy. A major breakthrough. White House Press Secretary Tony Snow says the phrase doesn't capture the, quote, dynamism of the tactics that America and its allies are employing. The announcement came 2 weeks ahead of an election in which Democrats are calling for a change in direction in Iraq. The last time Bush used the phrase stay the course in a speech was August 30th in Salt Lake City. Since then, he stressed that his administration has been adopting in Iraq to enemy changes in tactics.
There's still a lot of work ahead for searchers who've been finding human remains in recent days at Ground Zero. They have yet to open more than half of the underground spaces that were apparently overlooked during the initial excavation. Already in the past week, they found more than 100 pieces of human remains, ranging in size from tiny fragments to leg bones. 18 new pieces were found yesterday. Mayor Michael Bloomberg insisted again today that construction at the site won't be stopped for the search. But relatives of some of those killed in the 9/11 attacks have called for the rebuilding to stop until the recovery is finished. For about 40% of the victims, no remains have been identified.
New York's comptroller violated state law by failing to pay nearly $83,000 for using a state employee as a chauffeur for his ailing wife. This according to the State Ethics Commission that ruled yesterday. Hevesi, a Democratic seeking the second four-year term as the state's chief financial officer, acknowledged last month that he had not paid the state back for having his wife driven around by a state employee since 2003. He apologized and repaid the state $82,688 for the worker's service after his Republican challenger, J. Christopher Callahan, went public with the issue. The commissioner, however, said that the $82,000 was too little and faulted the comptroller's office for failing to keep any accounting of how the driver spent his time. The ruling could mean a fine for Hevesi, suspension, or even removal from office for breaking the public officer's law. Hevesi also faces criminal probe by Albany's County District Attorney David Soares.
Senator Barack Obama said yesterday he is seriously considering a run for the White House in 2008. In an interview on NBC's Meet the Press, Obama left clear the impression that he could well run, a move that would fundamentally reshape the contest for the Democratic nomination. Obama's political stock has been on a sharp climb since he gave the keynote address at the 2004 Democratic National Convention. He has been turned into one of the party's biggest fundraisers and most popular speakers. Obama's statements yesterday highlighted more speculation that the Democratic contest could feature him and New York Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, who is considered the leading candidate at the moment.
President Bush on Monday trumpeted the strength of the economy, an important issue in congressional races that will determine whether Republicans retain control of the House. Faced with a difficult midterm elections and a deteriorating situation in Iraq, Bush is highlighting the positive. The White House advisors, who think the president should get more credit for recent positive economic news, insist that Bush is not trying to change the subject away from the unpopular war. The president will continue to talk about Iraq and the war on terrorism as the November 7th election nears. Democrats contend the middle class isn't enjoying the benefits of the recent U.S. economic gains. They say the sluggish median earnings show paychecks have failed to keep pace with inflation, and they also note the rising health care costs and energy costs. Democrats need a 15-seat pickup in the House and a gain of 6 seats in the Senate to reclaim control.
Montana Governor Brian Schweitzer unveiled plans today in Helena for one of the longest electrical transmission lines built in the West in 40 years. The plan to carry green energy to markets in Las Vegas, Los Angeles, and Phoenix. Schweitzer promised to help the builder, TransCanada, get environmental permits for the $2 billion project. TransCanada is an independent power and infrastructure company. The line would carry electricity created by either wind power or synthetic gas derived from coal to meet clean energy requirements in the Southwest. Schweitzer has designated coal to liquid fuel plants as one of his top priorities. Despite many business and regulatory hurdles, developers say they hope to fast-track the project for completion by 2011. Time is 5:25. Tonight, we're asking for you to become a member of KBOO Community Radio. Please make a pledge by calling 503-232-8818 or 877-500-KBOO. And time now to go to Pledge Central.
And there, hope you're having a great evening out there. Please get on the phone right away and call 503-232-8818 or
1-877-500-5266. And some people have been doing just that. Eileen is renewing. She's in Portland. Kurt, also in Portland, also renewing. And Beth is a new member in Portland. Yay for them.
Yay.
Yay. And speaking of big cheers, we want big cheers to go out to Milo's City Cafe at 1325 Northeast Broadway, Mississippi Pizza Pub at 3552 North Mississippi, hence its name, and Eat Pizza at 2037 Southwest Morrison. And you know why? Because they give us food. Food is good. Food is our friend. And they're doing it because they are part of the KBOO community. They're not charging us for it. They are saying KBOO is important. People are doing good work there. We're going to give them food during the pledge break. So those are the folks who are doing that today. And we say thank you, folks. And we're going to say thank you to anybody who calls up at 503-232-8818. And says, I want to pledge money. I want to give, say, $120 by giving $10 a month through my checking account to you. That's one of the ways you can do it. It's really easy. I think of the electronic funds transfer as a way to do the working class KBOO. For instance, you're making $10 an hour, then contribute $10 a month. If you're making $6.25 plus tips, you know, make it $6.25 a month. Whatever you are making hourly, that's what you should give to KBOO. You can afford it, and it's great for us. So give us a call, 1-877-500-5266 or 503-232-8818. If you happen to be a psychiatrist and you're charging $150 an hour, well, $150 a month. We can work with that. And you can feel so good that you're making a real difference in the community. So,
and when Noah? We say community, we mean community. In other words, we, you know, we're not like those, you know, infomercial groups, you know, that try to sell you Bowflex machines or, you know, drugs like Levitra, you know, that get your freak on for 4 hours or more, you know. We are truly community. We're as grassroots as you can be. I mean, here at KBOO, you know, we have over 450 volunteers that dedicate hours of their time every single week to make sure that the dream lives on, you know, that this megaphone is accessible to anyone in the community that so desires to have their voices heard, their music heard, their arts and public affairs heard, anything like that. And by the way, we are the gift that keeps on giving. For a $90 minimum pledge, for instance, you can pick up what's called the Kinky Cornell Texas Bonus Package. It consists of two CDs from the Cornell Herd Band, one comb from the Cornell Herd Band, as well as one collectible piece of memorabilia from the Kiki Friedman for Governor of Texas campaign, a button, and your choice of bumper sticker with his own snappy slogan like, why the hell not, or if I'm elected, I'm the first Texas Jew boy. So anyway, for a $90 minimum pledge, which is approximately 24 cents an hour, 24 cents a day, excuse me, and roughly about $1.65 a week, you know, I think that's an incredible deal. And that could be yours by calling 503-232-8818. And if you live outside the Portland metropolitan area, 1-877-500-KBOO.
Now, we have 450 volunteers, approximately. And I'll give you a few other interesting facts about KBOO that gives you a picture of what a community radio station is about. We have an annual budget of about $700,000. 86% of that budget comes from our members. So that's how important you are. In other words, very. Now, the percent of listeners who join KBOO, it's 10%. Only 10% of you folks listening out there have actually become members. Maybe it's because you don't understand what a great thing it is to be a member. Not only can you come and get training and be, you know, a programmer or a news person or any of those other things, but you have a real say in what happens. You get to vote for the board of directors. You can be on any of the different committees that make KBOO happen. So remember, 503-232-8818, and you become part owner of a radio station. Or if you're out of town, you can do it at 1-877-500-5266. We want to be owned by you, by our members.
Bill, if I may I slip into my alter ego for a second?
You kind of may indeed. It fits you so well,
this
Noah.
This is GM Hoffloon Hot Tower telling you to get on the phone right away and call 503-232-8818. And again, for all you folks living outside the City of Roses, 1-877-500-KBOO. I mean, as a matter of fact, you know, 86%, you know, the funds we get are from community people like yourself listening out there. I mean, community radio nowadays is as scarce as hen's teeth, for crying out loud. And so we encourage all of you listening out there, you know, if you want to make a proclamation that, yeah, I support community radio. Yeah, I support, you know, the grassroots mobilization. I support, you know, all kinds of wonderful programming that doesn't get heard, you know, about nut jobs like Tom DeLay, you know, environmental movements, you know, war and peace issues, environmental issues. You call it 503-232-8818. And again, my buddy over Bill over there wants to say the other number.
The other number, the all-important other number. 1-877-500-5266 is the other number. That's the one for folks outside of Portland. And then the number, 503-232-8818. That's for you folks who are local. And so between those two numbers, we cover everybody in Canada and the United States of America. And it's 503-232-8818. We want KBOO. Back to the news.
Going back to news. Stay tuned for my Hoffloon Hot Tower commentary.
The current time is 5:32:07. And now for something completely different. A highfalutin daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Poor Dennis Hastert. Even though the longtime House Speaker is third in line to be our president, very few Americans had ever heard of him until the Mark Foley scandal. What a way to be introduced to the public. One day you're a political unknown, the next day you're the bumbling, bloated old blowhard who's on TV trying to dodge blame for a sordid sex scandal in the Page program that you run. Denny did nothing about a member of his own Republican leadership team who was zipping email sex messages to teenage boy Pages. Now, Hastert, desperately trying to hang on to his job, says that he will accept responsibility for the scandal, but he wants no punishment. Republican politicos and pundits are frantically insisting that Denny's appalling leadership failure doesn't really concern voters. But, whoops, the latest New York Times CBS poll finds that 80% of Americans consider the Foley-Hastert scandal a serious matter. And 79% said that Republican leaders have been more concerned about protecting their own political butts than about protecting young Pages from sexual predators in Congress. These numbers are hardly the only bad news for the GOP as it heads into November's midterm elections. The party was counting on playing the fear of terrorism card to scare voters into sticking with the status quo, even sending George W. cross-country last month to deliver an orchestrated series of scare speeches. But George flopped. The latest poll shows that public approval for his handling of the war on terrorism actually dropped as a result of his trying to politicize the issue. Also, Bush's overall job approval rating dropped down to a pitiful one-third, and 83% of Americans now say Bush is mostly lying when he talks about progress in his Iraq war. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's getting to where the Bushites can't even fool some of the people.
This Jim Hightower commentary has been brought to you by the United Steelworkers, the union committed to winning every employee's right to choose representation free from fear of being intimidated or fired. Visit us on the World Wide Web at usw.org.
Stay tuned for Labor Radio at 6 p.m. following this newscast. At 7, it's Time Sound with Kevin Barry. Tonight's weather in both Portland and the Columbia Gorge shows cloudy, with lows around 40 degrees. Tomorrow's weather, again in both Portland and the Columbia Gorge, shows rain in morning and afternoon, with highs around 55 degrees. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News, Portland, Corvallis, Vancouver, and Hood River.
The Israeli government has admitted to using the controversial phosphorus weapons in its attack on Lebanon this past summer. Chemical weapons cause is similar to napalm and causes horrific burning when it comes in contact with human flesh. FSRN's Aaron Grant spoke by telephone with Dar Jamail, independent Middle Eastern journalist, regarding the matter.
Dar, you were in Lebanon while the Israelis were bombing it. Are you surprised that they have now admitted to using white phosphorus?
I'm not surprised at all, because when I was there, which was for roughly the middle 2 weeks of that 34-day war, I was interviewing both refugees coming from southern Lebanon and doctors when I went down to southern Lebanon myself, both vividly describing the use of white phosphorus by the Israeli military in villages around southern Lebanon.
Well, explain what that looks like when you go and see someone who has been hit with a white phosphorus bomb.
Well, when someone is hit by white phosphorus, keep in mind it has a similar effect of napalm in that it's an incendiary weapon. So it's chemicals that actually, a fuelish type of substance that actually hits someone, although in this case, rather than napalm being fuel with white phosphorus, it's more chemicals. It hits the skin, it is on fire when it hits them, and it will literally burn them all the way down to the bone. There is very little that someone can do to extinguish this type of flame. Putting water on it will have zero effect whatsoever. When I interviewed people in Fallujah after the November 2004 siege about what they did about it.
And that's in Iraq.
That's in Iraq when the Americans used it. They said that they learned, it was being used enough that people learned that if they put damp mud on it, that would at least slow it down enough so they could get to a clinic. But it's a very insidious, horrible weapon, because when I was in Lebanon, I actually interviewed a doctor who said that, yes, they had seen people hit with it, and one of his colleagues, another doctor at his hospital, had actually burnt his arm after picking up a small child that had been hit with white phosphorus.
Well, the cabinet minister of Israel, Yaakov Edri, said in the Israeli parliament yesterday, the IDF holds white phosphorus munitions in different forms. The IDF made use of phosphorus shells during the war against Hezbollah in attacks against military targets in open ground.
This is the same type of propaganda that the U.S. military said when the Pentagon was confronted with the fact that there was irrefutable proof that they had used white phosphorus in Fallujah in 2004. They claimed, as the Israelis are, that yes, we only used it against military targets, because they're going out of their way to make this claim, because white phosphorus is not technically an illegal weapon by the Geneva Convention, but it's an illegal weapon. It does violate international law if it's used in an area where there could be civilians. And that is exactly what the Israelis did. It was an urban fight for the most part, just like Fallujah was for the Americans. They used white phosphorus in villages. Civilians were hit. There's irrefutable proof of this, and that's why they're basically trying to lie and say that, no, we only used it against military targets, which is simply not true.
Well, another problem that's been given wide documentation is the issue of cluster bombs, the Israeli use of cluster bombs in Lebanon. There are new cases nearly every day of somebody being hurt by a cluster bomb. The Guardian of London reports that a 12-year-old boy and his 9-year-old brother were hit by cluster bombs while they were picking olives. Your reaction?
It's really disgusting to me, the cluster bomb situation on top of the white phosphorus. I figured the white phosphorus information would come out in time once enough irrefutable proof was presented, which we've already had in Lebanon. But really, with the cluster bombs, what really is so disgusting to me about that is the vast majority of the cluster bombs dropped in southern Lebanon by the Israelis were dropped in the last 48 hours of the war. They dropped them after they already knew the deadline was coming, the ceasefire was coming, so they deliberately dropped hundreds and hundreds, thousands of these munitions in there, knowing full well that a huge percentage of them would not explode as they are designed not to explode, so that then here we are months after the war and children are still picking them up daily and being wounded and killed. And this is exactly the intent of the Israeli military.
Human Rights Watch has also faulted Hezbollah for using cluster bombs, although on a much more limited scale in Israel. And, of course, you have the firing of Katyusha rockets at Israel, which was pretty arbitrary, thousands of them with very little aiming going on at all. What does all of this mean taken together?
I think all of it means it's very clear that war crimes were committed on both sides, without a doubt, when any military power, whether it be Hezbollah or the Israeli military, uses these types of weapons in areas where there could be civilians, it is a war crime. And at the end of the day, while of course Israel sustained heavy losses in their military and Hezbollah did in their armed wing, and of course civilians on both sides suffered, of course the vast majority of those being on the Lebanese side, at the end of the day, I think the one broad statement I would make is that, as always in war, it's the civilian populations that pay the highest price. This rhetoric that the Israeli military uses, purity of arms, and the U.S. military likes to use as far as smart weapons and precision strikes and this sort of thing, is just propaganda. The reality is more civilians are killed today proportionally in war than ever before in history, and that's exactly what we saw in this Israeli-Hezbollah conflict.
That was FSRN's Aaron Clance speaking with independent journalist Dar Jamail.
Thailand's military-installed government said Monday it would maintain martial law because supporters of ousted Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawatra were still out to create political chaos. The military staged a bloodless coup on September 19th when Thaksin was in New York on an official trip and appointed an interim government led by Prime Minister Surayud Chulanont, a former army commander. He has promised to step down after a new constitution is drafted and a general election is held next October. Among other restrictions on civil liberties, the law bars the public gathering of more than five people. The government eased the restrictions by allowing political gatherings, but confining them to indoor areas.
Nearly 2 million people in southern Afghanistan are expected to need food aid this winter following a drought. The United Nations has called for an extra $40 million in emergency fund. The food shortages have been made worse by intensified fighting in the region and an increased cultivation of opium poppies instead of food.
With tensions high between the Western and Islamic worlds, Dubai's leaders are trying to help with an unusual new form of tourism in this Gulf Arab boomtown, best known for its shopping and sunbathing. Dubai's leader is funding mosque tours for Western visitors that aim to clear up misconceptions about Islam, especially that the religion condones violence. The ultimate goal is diffusing strains between Muslims and Christians that arose after the September 11, 2001 attacks in the United States and the war in Iraq. The tours of Jumeirah Mosque have grown over a decade from irregular gatherings of a dozen people to five times weekly tours of 100 or more. It has budgeted $2.7 million for a multimedia center devoted to Islam and Arab culture at the mosque. The center is also expanding tours to seven more mosques in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, capital of the United Arab Emirates.
Rebels say they have seized control of the eastern Chad town of Goz Beira. Up to 60 rebel vehicles are believed to have entered the town about 100 miles from the Sudanese border. The government spokesman contradicted rebels' claims, saying the Chad army had repelled the attack. Several rebel groups hostile to the Chad president, Idriss Deby, operate in the east of the country, and this disputed area is adjacent to the Sudan region of Darfur.
Sudan has ordered John Pronk, the head of the United Nations mission in Sudan, to leave the country. The demand came after Pronk wrote in his personal weblog that Sudan's army had suffered defeats in the Darfur region and its morale was low. Sudan's junior foreign minister, Samani al-Wasila, said Pronk had strayed beyond his mandate. Uganda's president visited the southern Sudanese city of Juba this weekend for face-to-face peace talks with the Lord's Resistance Army rebels. FSRN's Emmanuel Okela reports from Kampala, Uganda.
President Museveni's visit came after reports of renewed attacks threatened to dash hopes of a peace agreement between Uganda's government and the Lord's Resistance Army rebels. Over 30 civilians and an army captain were reported killed by the rebels last week. During the visit, President Museveni met with the rebel peace team and assured them of blanket amnesty should they sign a comprehensive peace deal with his government. He also told them to stop dragging the talks, warning that the military option is still open should talks fail by the end of this year. In an earlier meeting with Southern Sudanese President Salva Kiir, President Museveni requested the authorities stop sending food and other logistical supplies to the LRA rebels outside the two designated assembly points. The rebels deserted the locations, alleging attacks by Ugandan forces. Reading for Emmanuel Okella in Kampala, Uganda, I'm Brian Edwards-Tiegert for Free Speech Radio News.
The people of Panama voted in favor of a $5.2 billion plan to widen and deepen the country's famous shipping canal. In a nationwide referendum, people voted 4-1 to back the project. Planners hope the expansion will keep the canal competitive. Around 40 ships a day pass through the 80-kilometer waterway, which links the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans.
Tonight, we're asking for you to become a member of KBOO Community Radio. Please make a pledge by calling 503-232-8818 or 877-500-KBOO. Time now to go to the Palace of Pledge.
This is Kiki Freeman here telling you that money can buy you a fine dog, but only love can make it wag its tail. And you can do so by calling 503-232-8818 or... friends over at Pledge Membership Central.
I love that, man. I talk about this all the time, man.
1-877-500-KBOO.
So, Don.
So, what we'd like you to do, you know, is support the Megaphone of Community Radio, by the way. Okay. And we have many exciting gifts that we have to give away, too,
well,
for
obviously,
all you,
you gotta understand.
People listening out there. For
yeah,
any dollar
yes,
Megaphone Pledge, for instance, you can get the Kiki Cornell Texas Bonus Package. It consists of two CDs from Cornell Herd Band. One comb for the Cornell Herd Band, one bumper sticker with your choice of snappy slogan like "Why the hell not?" or "Elect me, your first Texas Jew boy."
There you go,
also,
man.
A governor, a Kiki Freeman for governor campaign button.
Excellent.
That could be yours for a $90 minimum pledge.
Oh, yeah.
And it could be yours by calling 503-232-8818.
Which one?
And now my friends are back in Membership Central, or the Palace of Pledge, as Lisa calls it.
Yes, indeed. That is us. We are but courtiers in the Palace of Pledges. But you out there behind the phone number 503-232-8818 and 1-877-500-5266, you are the viziers, the prime ministers. You are the big power behind the Palace of Pledges, because without you, there will not be any pledges.
The Maharishi of membership.
Exactly. And we need you. We need you to make that phone call. We need you to pledge $5 a month, $10 a month, $20 a month. That's $240 a year, which is a lot of money all at one time. But $20 a month is not necessarily too much, especially if you're making $20 or more an hour doing whatever it is you might be doing. That's what we like to hear, you know, the dollar an hour per month KBOO working class pledge.
And specifically, we're asking you to support right now the KBOO, locally produced the KBOO Evening News, which has been telling the truth. You know, we're not like the Bush administration. We're not going to cut and run. We are going to stay the course of telling you the truth. Where else are you going to hear about the news in Uganda and Panama? But nowhere but the KBOO Evening News. Locally produced, we've been telling the truth for the last couple decades as a corporate monopoly media has been going the other direction, and you can help support that kind of truth by giving us a call at 503-232-8818 or...
Well, I'm glad you said that. 1-877-500-5266, and I think Noah wants to tell us something. Yes?
Yeah, where else do you hear me give Ted Stevens a hard time, too? Ted Stevens, Bridge to Nowhere, you know.
Oh, I remember him, Senator Bridge to Nowhere.
It's a series of tubes, I tell you.
Yes.
Yeah, where else do you hear, you know, all kinds of, you know, sorts of topics that don't make it to the public airwaves often, including peace and justice issues, environmental issues, ethics issues, and so forth.
Or, for instance, tonight, the Labor Report. The Labor Radio, you don't get Labor Radio on any other radio network. And speaking of things you don't get at other places, I would like to encourage people to contribute a $60 minimum pledge for Myth America, Democracy versus Capitalism. So make your call and back to the news.
503-232-8818.
There were demonstrations in Hungary coinciding with the 50th anniversary of its uprising against Soviet rule. The demonstrators carried placards with 7-foot-tall letters spelling out the word freedom in Hungarian. But in a reminder of the crackdown by the Soviets, the current government sent a line of 150 police in riot gear and 3 water cannons, who slowly advanced on a crowd of about 200 protesters who threw rocks and bottles in response. The police fired back with tear gas as a helicopter circled low above the crowd. 50 years ago, the Red Army attack was launched in 1956 and killed about 2,800 Hungarians and 700 Soviet troops. Strikes and protests continued for several weeks until the uprising was definitively ended in January of 1957. Some 200,000 Hungarians escaped the country, with at least 225 accused of participating in the uprising were executed.
A search is underway for a U.S. soldier who went missing tonight. Coalition troops and Iraqi security forces are trying to locate the soldier, military officials said. The soldier's disappearance comes during an especially violent period in Iraq. Weekend violence across Iraq brought the military's death toll for the month to 87, the highest this year. The military today announced another soldier died Sunday and a Marine died on Saturday in fighting in Iraq's volatile Anbar province.
An entire marketplace was burned to the ground in the poor West African country of Guinea-Bissau because the country didn't have a working fire engine. The town of Plymouth, Massachusetts has responded, shipping a used fire trucks, hoses, and an ambulance halfway across the world to a community they never even knew. Fire Chief Alan P. Hoyt donated 3,800 feet of hose to the country after hearing an appeal from a friend. 2 pumper engines and an ambulance from other communities were also donated. Guinea-Bissau is about 3 times the size of Connecticut and has a population of 1.4 million.
28 million people in the world are blind, yet their blindness could have been prevented or their eyesight restored if only they had access to proper eye care or a seat on the world's only jumbo jet outfitted as a flying eye hospital. The Orbis Flying Eye Hospital is a DC-10 wide-body aircraft converted into an ophthalmic surgical center and an innovative teaching facility. Since 1982, when Orbis took off on its first sight-saving mission, more than 3 million people have received medical treatment. If the teaching component is estimated, as many as 27.5 million children and adults have benefited as a result of the skills gained by doctors and medical professionals through Orbis training, then shared among colleagues and passed on to patients. Many of the world's leading surgeons donate their time to perform surgery and teach aboard the aircraft. 124,000 healthcare workers have been trained in more than 80 countries in all facets of eye care and surgeries.
America's death toll on Iraq is now up to 86 this month. There haven't been as many U.S. deaths in 1 month there in close to 2 years. 5 soldiers and a Marine became the latest victims over the weekend, killed by gunfire and roadside bombs. Remember, the international force that trains Iraq police also lost his life due to explosions. Today marks the last day of Ramadan, the Muslim holy month. The U.S. military has expected the month to be a bloody one. Many Iraqis in Baghdad are staying home and avoiding public celebrations.
And that's the KBOO Evening News for Monday, October 23rd, 2006. If you have any questions or comments about what you heard this evening, please call us at 503-231-8032 and leave a message on extension 203 or send an email to pmnews@kboo.org. And that goes for news tips as well. Call us with your news tips at 503-231-8032, extension 203. You are listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland. In Corvallis at 100.7 FM, on Translator K264AA, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on Translator K220HR. You can log on to our website at kboo.fm. Our producer for tonight's newscast is me, Mike Monkbold. Our assistant producer is Ross Egan. Our wire editors are Jill Severson and Noah Eaton. Tonight's audio editors are Laura Young and Noah Eaton. Special thanks to our reporter, Lisa Loving. Our engineer is Jeff Lovell. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. And I'm Mike Monkbold.
And I'm Andy Seaton. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7 a.m., hear the KBOO Morning News. At 7:30, Abe and Joe host the Joe and Abe Talk Radio Show. At 9, hear a special membership drive featuring journalist Eric Schlosser, author of Fast Food Nation. He spoke in Portland last May, and we'll hear his talk. At 10:30, on stage in studio, the guest is Alexis Hamilton, Education and Outreach Director for Portland Opera. She'll be talking about the upcoming production of Faust. And at 11, it's Democracy Now! That's all right here on KBOO, your nonprofit, volunteer-powered, listener-sponsored community radio station. Volunteer with our humble broadcast by calling us at 503-231-8032, extension 203. If you can't afford a pledge, we can always come down and use your skills. We can even train you how to do all of this good stuff. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for joining us indeed. I'm Mike Monkbold, and we're going to turn you over right now to our friends at the Pledge Drive Center, who are going to ask for your help in keeping this station running.
That's right. Just for these last 4 minutes, we again, just want to reiterate for you to get on the phone and call 503-232-8818. Or?
Well, 1-877-500-5266. And let me just say this. Help! Help!
Help, for the love of God!
Please call. Please give money. Please help us continue what we do best, which is bringing you great news in public affairs, incredible diversity of music and arts and information that you get nowhere else. We need your help. We're not too proud to say it. That's the essence of community, working together.
And Michael Monkfold was, just mentioning to, volunteer with our humble newscast. Andy Seaton, too, was just mentioning just that just now. And the fact is, here at KBOO, we're made up of over 450 volunteers that come in regularly and dedicate hours of their time. And the fact is, we all play various roles here. I mean, some are more optimistic, some are more cynical than others here. I happen to be one of the more optimistic folks here myself.
I play a Kaiser role myself.
Yeah, I started volunteering here about a year and a half ago, roughly, and often I like to, because I have like several planets aligned in what's called Sagittarius, which is a planet, which is a sign associated with optimism, growth, and the spirit of knowledge and such. I thought I should take on the nickname, the Sagittaricizer. And that's what I do. I kind of, balance the news content and such, where you see what's wrong with the picture, but moreover, you see what's right with the picture, because progress really is a two-way street, and I think when you see like how things are worsening and how things are bettering, you get a great perspective, and you could make sure that all these various roles that we play here at KBOO are continuing to be assessed, and you can do so by calling 503-232-8818. Or if you live outside the City of Roses,
you would call 1-877-500-KBOO. That is 1-877-500-5266. Because here at KBOO, we bring you the truth 5 nights a week on a locally produced news and public affairs program that we call the KBOO Evening News. And we need to get some support here, and there are many ways you can do that. You can come right down here and write us out a check. You can give us a call at 503-232-8818. We can take it out of your out of your checking account with our electronic funds transfer. So a $60 pledge is only $5 every month. But you need to give us a call, 503-232-8818, or
1-877-500-5266. We cannot do it without you. We need you to ring the phones. We need you to call. And by the way, if you're going to come on down, let me give you the address. That's 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. That is a half block south of Burnside. And 8th Avenue is about a half mile or less east of the Burnside Bridge. It's real easy to get to. There is generally parking around. It's just around the corner from a bus stop. So come on over, take a tour, give us money, and become part of the family. 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266.
And as promised now, we are pleased to present to you this week's edition of Labor Radio.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Teamsters Local 206, helping Oregon's working families fight for good jobs and a better future. For information about how the Teamsters can help you win respect at work, the number is 503-251-2344. And also by AFSCME Local 88, protecting worker rights and fighting to improve the wages and working conditions of members who work for Multnomah County, Central City Concern, Transition Projects, and American Friends Service Committee. More information at 503-239-9858 or www.local88.ws.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, a weekly program about working people, the labor movement, and organizing on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Don McIntosh. Do you feel a pervasive economic insecurity? If so, you're not alone, and your fears may be pretty accurate, according to Yale University political science professor Jacob Hacker. Professor Hacker is author of the just-released book, The Great Risk Shift, subtitled The Assault on American Jobs, Families, Healthcare, and Retirement, and How You Can Fight Back. He'll be speaking tonight at Powell's Books on Hawthorne at 7:30 p.m., and he'll be joining us for the first half of our show. In the second part of the hour, we'll be looking at what's at stake in the 2006 November election, zooming in on the issues of greatest importance to working people. We'll be joined by political consultant Kari Chisholm, founder of the blog BlueOregon.com. That's in the second half of the hour. Now I'd like to welcome to KBOO in the studio. I have with me here Jacob Hacker. Jacob, it's good to meet you in person.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Don.
You've written a book, The Great Risk Shift, subtitled The Assault on American Jobs, Families, Healthcare, and Retirement, and How You Can Fight Back. We'll hopefully cover all of that in our short segment tonight. A lot of attention, it seems to be, has been focused in recent years on rising inequality in America. And I think your book captures something that hasn't been looked at as much, which is rising volatility. People are experiencing more and more risk, and that's not an accident. Why did you decide to write your book?
Well, one of the reasons I did decide to write it is that I think that the issue of rising economic insecurity and instability isn't always well captured by the ways in which we've looked at the economy. And in fact, although economic inequality has grown dramatically over the last generation and is a serious national problem, I was surprised when I did my research to discover that instability of income, how much family incomes rises and falls from year to year, has actually risen faster than inequality. And really what the book is showing is that in a whole range of areas of our lives, from healthcare to retirement pensions to the finances of our families to job security, more risk and responsibility is being shifted onto the shoulders of hardworking Americans, and our system of economic security in the United States is meanwhile gradually falling apart, with employer-provided pensions shifting more risk onto workers, with healthcare costs rising while coverage declines, with the job market becoming more uncertain. And so this book is really is trying to put that issue of insecurity at the center of the national agenda and arguing that, you know, even middle-class Americans who aren't necessarily concerned about the rising inequality of incomes should be concerned about the decline of their economic security.
I was trying to think of a way to describe this, and yesterday I was talking about it with someone reading your book. You know, I'm thinking maybe in the 70s or the 60s, occasionally individuals or families were going to see a loss of income. Maybe in some extreme case you might lose a job or get demoted or something like that. Apparently at that time people maybe would fall occasionally, but they wouldn't fall as far as they do today. Is that what you're finding?
That is what I find. For example, I use a unique data set called the Panel Study of Income Dynamics that started in the late 1960s. So I'm actually able to compare the overtime economic dynamics of families then and now. And, for example, if you look at these big income drops, say an income drop of half or more of your income, which is really a devastating event for a family, in the early 1970s, you would have had to round up 14 average families before you found one that had such an income drop, whereas today you have to only come up with about one in six before you find one that's had a drop of that size. That means that about 17% of Americans, average Americans, are experiencing these kinds of income drops today, as opposed to about 7% in the early 1970s. You know, that's the point of the book. It's that our economy has gotten more uncertain and more dynamic, and at the same time, the system of economic security that was built around this more stable economy has really dramatically eroded. And as you know, that system of security was premised on the idea that employers would really be the first line of defense for most workers, providing health and pension benefits and a stable job. And we just can't count on that today. But unfortunately, political leaders and corporate leaders haven't stepped up to the plate and articulated a new social contract for a new economy.
That's one of the things that I thought was interesting about your book, is considering this. And actually, we had on this show a little while back New York Times reporter Louis Uchitel, who's written a book about the growing, basically job insecurity. You know, people don't have that kind of long-term contract. And, you know, I think as a person who, you know, I was born in 1970 and I've sort of grown up experiencing this kind of economy, it's easy to forget that maybe there was a time, a generation ago, when the idea of market fluctuation was a business risk, not a worker's risk. The idea maybe that your skills might become obsolete was a business risk. It was something that businesses had to take into consideration and maybe think about investing and training their employees. Well, now apparently the mantra is that individuals have to take that risk. If you maybe have obsolete skills, well, you just better get back into school. And if not, you know, there's a scrap heap for you.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of putting it. You know, the ideology of the 1990s and today was really a you're-on-your-own kind of ideology. That's not to say that there weren't politicians like Bill Clinton, for example, that talked about these issues, but it was very much in terms of the idea that we should invest in education, we should maybe lift up people who are at the bottom, but not that much worry about the strains that are facing the middle class, at least not after the failure of President Clinton's proposal for expanded health coverage. So I think that we've seen a constriction of our vision over the last 30 years, and we've come to accept the level of economic instability in workers' lives that really is detrimental to economic opportunity in the United States. And that's really, I think, the argument that is at the heart of the book, that at one time there was an ideal that economic security was a cornerstone of opportunity. You know, the GI Bill, you know, subsidized mortgages, the expansion of Social Security and Medicare, these were all premised on the idea that people needed a basic foundation of economic security to be able to get ahead. And today now there's an ideology that basically people should be, you know, out there completely on their own, and we're seeing more and more families and individuals fail because of it. We're seeing rising rates of bankruptcy and home foreclosure and increasing number of Americans without health insurance or secure pension benefits. And I'm really of the view that we need to recast this debate today.
You're listening to Labor Radio. We're talking with Jacob Hacker, a professor at Yale University and also author of The Great Risk Shift. He'll be talking more about this subject in the book tonight at 7:30 at Powell's Books on Hawthorne. Check that out after this show ends. Actually, I want to say one of the things I liked about the book was that you do something a little unusual. You begin to name names. I want to ask you who killed economic security in the United States, but I want to get your answer after our little break. I'd like to, at this point in the show, invite Kevin and Bill to Labor Radio to tell you how you could become a member of KBOO.
Well, it's very easy, Don. You just pick up your phone, and if you're in the 503 area code, you dial 503-232-8818, and then someone on our end picks up the phone and says, "This is KBOO. May I take your pledge?" Now, however, you might be in a different area code somewhere in Canada or the United States, in which case you would dial 1-877-500-5266 and then see number one above. It goes the same from there. And it's a really easy thing to do. It takes 2 to 3 minutes or so, and then you become a member, or maybe you'll renew your membership, and you know that you are supporting Labor Radio, and you are supporting the news and public affairs and the diverse programming that makes KBOO special, makes it unique I would go so far as to say. Wouldn't you, Kevin?
I would, and right here at KABU, we're here to manage your risk by bringing you the truth on Labor Radio. Show your support for Don, show your support for live and local programming, news and public affairs here at KABU by giving us a call at 503-232-8818 or outside the Portland metropolitan area, 1-877-500-5266.
We need your help. We're not proud, and we're going to just say it. We need you to dial those phone numbers and give us money and make sure that KABU keeps going. Now, if you're listening to us somewhere else, say, Timbuktu or Beijing, then you would probably be listening to us at kboo.fm, in which case all you need to do is go to the button that says Join Now and click it, and then you can become part of the wonderful KABU family. So go ahead and do that, or call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Make the phones ring. Make the web bring messages of joy to us. And please become a member.
Labor Radio has a goal of $360, which if three of you loyal listeners out there would pledge through the electronic funds transfer at $10 per month, we could raise that $360 and keep the programming going. But we need you to do this right now. Give us a call, 503-232-8818, and let us know that you support Don, you support Labor Radio, you support KABU, because KABU is the only place you're going to hear news about the working class. And Don does a great job of finding people who are writing about the current economic conditions of the American worker out there and bringing them into the studio and getting them to talk about these fantastic books they've written. And we need to show Don that support by calling 503-232-8818 or
1-877-500-5266. Remember, we can't do it without you, and you don't get this programming without becoming part of the community. You got to call, folks. You got to put your money where your ears are, which is kind of a weird image. But anyway, you get the idea. Give us the call, 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266. Remember, when you call and give us, say, $10 a month, you're participating in what I think of as the KABU wage earners membership. You know, you're making $10 an hour. Think about giving us $10 a month. It's not all that tough to do. Give an hour's wage a month to KABU, because KABU pays off big for you. And as a matter of fact, considering the discounts that you get at businesses and services all over the area, if you're in the area, then you can have it pay for itself, literally. And it, once again, starts at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
Yeah, and consider what Bill said about giving 1 hour of your monthly wages to KABU. As a sustaining supporter of this station for many years, the electronic funds transfer is really a great way to go, because you really don't notice the money coming out of your account. And when you see your statement come from your bank and you look, hey, there's my KABU deduction, you feel good about it every month. You understand that you're keeping this valuable community resource on the air through just a small donation that you can do. And we know there's a lot of organized labor folks out there who listen to this program, who count on hearing news about the labor movement on this program. Please give us a call at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. And let us know that you appreciate the voice of labor being broadcast every Monday night here on KBOO.
And remember that when you, for instance, if you do give $120, you could get two of these three books that we're offering as thank you gifts for our members, new or otherwise. A $60 minimum pledge can get you Myth America, Democracy versus Capitalism, which explores the conflict between the forces suppressing corporate power, supporting corporate power in America, and the needs of a democratic society. Or The Heart of Whiteness by Robert Jensen. He was on the Friday Radio Zine, a very interesting interview. And this is a book that talks about the nature of whiteness, mixing personal experience with data and theory. Robert Jensen faces down the difficult realities of race, racism, and white privilege. And finally, Full Spectrum Disorder, by Stan Goff, an impassioned and vivid critique of U.S. foreign policy. Now, these are all things that affect working people, and the way to do it is 503-232-8818. Offer a $60 pledge or $120 pledge. And we also have another great book. Tell us about that one.
Well, this isn't a book. This is a deal, okay? And actually, this guy called up last week on my program, and you will, for your $120 minimum pledge, it's just $10 a month, you will get 2 hours of electrical work by a union electrician.
Ooh.
Hey, now that's a sweet deal. You know, you're not going to find, that's got to be worth at least $90 an hour for any electrician to come into your house. But this is a fellow brother who listens to KABU, who appreciates Labor Radio, is offering 2 hours of electrical work at your home or business by just calling up KABU at 503-232-8818 and making a $120 minimum pledge.
This is wonderful. Do we want to go back and hear more? Yes, we do. So let's go.
Thanks, Kevin and Bill. Again, you're listening to Labor Radio, of course. I'm Don McIntosh, your host, and with me in the studio is Jacob Hacker, author of The Great Risk Shift. Before we left on the break there, I asked you, one of the things that's extraordinary to me about your book is you actually named some names. It's not just some sort of a nebulous thing that happened, maybe, but actually there were people pushing for this shift in risk from government and corporations to individuals and families. Who did it?
Well, I mean, I think you're absolutely right to say that that's unusual. I think too often we talk about these diffuse forces of globalization or the transformation of our economy from manufacturing to services without recognizing that that there are real choices that are there for government officials and corporate leaders, and the choices they've been making have been shifting more risk onto workers. You know, my argument is not that political officials were responsible for these big changes in our economy, but it is the case that instead of building up the flood walls to protect families from economic risk, they're basically tearing the flood walls down in the name of individual personal responsibility. So who are some of these figures? I mean, I think that the key figures are Reagan, Gingrich, and Bush. Reagan was the person who first took the message that was being articulated by economists and by public intellectuals who were critical of government and really brought it into the popular sphere. He said, government isn't the solution to our problems today. Government is the problem. He said, the most frightening words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help, and it was good for a laugh. And there was certainly problems with the way in which government had managed the economy in the 70s. But it really missed the fact that only government can really provide a broad umbrella of protection for workers, and it embedded this big change in our economy that was shifting more risk onto workers. You know, Gingrich, when he came into office, was advocating a conservative opportunities society that became under President Bush the ownership society, and the essential element of this was individual management of your own economic risks. You know, individual Social Security accounts, private accounts. To manage health care, moving Medicare away from a guaranteed benefit and towards a voucher you can use to buy private health plans. All of this was basically unraveling the already tattered fabric of risk pooling in the private sector. And although some of these big goals weren't achieved, President Bush reached far too far with his proposal for Social Security privatization. These people were able to push back against any attempt to try to close the gap. So Newt Gingrich, for example, led the charge against President Clinton's health plan, which was deeply flawed but still would have helped millions of Americans get secure health coverage. And today, George Bush is, I think, one of the great obstacles that stands in the way of a real dialogue about how we would move into the 21st century with a system that would provide security and opportunity to all Americans.
It's what you write about is sort of what's not talked about much, this idea of social insurance.
Yes.
There are going to be calamities, you know, in some people's lives some of the time. Now, the question is, as a society, do we determine that, well, that's just tough luck, you deal with it yourself? Or are we going to maybe sort of even that out by broadening who's going to take care of, you know, your kids in the event that you die or are disabled? Well, you know, a few generations ago, we said Social Security. We said we're going to have a social commitment, a social insurance plan that basically, you know, can, you know, while we can't really replace the limb that you may have lost, at least we can make sure that you don't have to suffer or starve or that your children don't.
Right.
That contract is what's unraveling now, and it's not just in the public policy arena. I think you did a nice job in your book of sort of tracing the changing zeitgeist. You write, for example, America has undergone a sweeping ideological transformation away from an all-in-the-same-boat philosophy of shared risk toward a go-it-alone vision of personal responsibility.
Yes, absolutely. I think this is a big issue, and you know, the idea of shared risk is really at the heart of this vision of the common good that was the basis for the American dream. You know, there's a tendency to think that the only thing that Americans care about is freedom and the opportunity to make money. But in fact, if we look at the polls, we see that Americans are extremely supportive of Medicare and Social Security. They're worried about the decline of employer-provided health and pension benefits. And they say that they want to have the securities that they can get, so they can get ahead. It's not about, you know, making sure that everyone has a comfortable, everyone has everything they need, but that everyone has a basic foundation of financial security. And you're right. I mean, when Hurricane Katrina ripped through the Gulf Coast, Americans said, this is an issue that affects all of us, not just the people who are there. And that's because we saw this as a disaster that was, although it was exacerbated by human action and some people made mistakes in dealing with it, it was really ultimately our problem as a society. And that's the way we looked at economic risks for a long time, that we understood that people should make contributions to programs, that they should meet standards of eligibility, but that they should also be entitled to help when, through no fault of their own, they faced economic catastrophe. And I think that's an ideal for the 21st century. We have a more uncertain economy. We have a more flexible economy. We need to have people be able to invest in skills and look toward the future with confidence. And yet, at the same time, we're pulling the rug out from under American workers and their families.
Jacob Hacker, you'll be speaking tonight at 7:30 once again at Powell's Books on Hawthorne, not the downtown store, but the one on Hawthorne, about your book, The Great Risk Shift. But I wanted to encourage, of course, everyone to go to that. If you can't make that, I wanted to give folks the opportunity to call in with a question in the few remaining minutes we have. The number to call in, not of course the donation number is 232-8818. Don't neglect that. But the number to call in to ask you a question, 503-231-8187. You know, I guess for me, some of this stuff is sort of pretty bothersome for the social morality aspect of it. There's been held up this kind of what you might call the ethos of the gambler, but it's sort of it's become, I've seen in the last 10, 15, 20 years, really a shift in the idea of the stock market as being somehow a viable ethical model for society. That, you know, if you take risks, then you deserve the rewards. There's unfortunately not much discussion of the downside of that risk, and what if you lose? Well, I guess you picked your bets poorly.
Well, that's right, and you know, this isn't an ethic, by the way, that our corporate sector subscribes to. I mean, we created the idea of limited liability for corporations precisely to encourage entrepreneurs to take risks, because we knew that people should be on the line for some of those losses, but they shouldn't be stuck into debt prisons or find themselves completely bereft of any economic standing because they bet on the wrong horse. And the other thing I would want to say is that this new ethic, I think, really misunderstands the nature of risk today. I was surprised when I started to look at the evidence of how often it is that people make the right choices and that puts them at risk. You know, people who have kids, and married parents who have kids are twice as likely to file for bankruptcy as other people. You know, I tell the story in the book of a union contractor who decides that he's going to go out on his own and set up his own business and then finds out that he has had two strokes and he doesn't have health insurance. So if Republicans really believe and conservatives really believe in an entrepreneurial, individualistic economy, then they're going to have to also recognize that the web of social connections that makes that economy work is includes this idea of shared risk. And I think if you extend your view further, as you say, about the moral philosophy of capitalism, it's always been the case that we understand capitalism to rest on a commitment to buffering the economic risks that workers face. It's not a sustainable system. It's not possible to expand trade, for example. It's not possible to have a deregulated economy if we don't provide people with these basic protections. So I think those who don't believe in extensive new regulations of the economy or don't want to cut back on trade should really put their money where their mouths are and call for greater security for workers.
I want to give you a chance in the remaining minutes to talk about the last part of the title of your book is How You Can Fight Back. I'm guessing that you want to talk more about the collective fight back, but before we get to that, do you have any advice just for individuals? I don't mean like stock investment advice, but we're facing a serious shredding of the safety net that was going to catch you if you fall. So how should people be reacting if they're able?
Well, I think it really just calls on us to be a lot more aware of the economic risk we face and to better prepare for them. And that's hard for most people. I mean, it would be one thing if we were facing a lot more income instability and people were saving a lot and they didn't have large debts. But we know that's not the case. The savings rate has been negative for the last 2 years. The median family has a debt equal to about 125% of its income. So one thing I say is that if you're aware of these risks, then you really should turn the increasing instability of your life to your advantage in the sense that you should be trying to put away as much as you can at those times when you're riding high to protect you when you fall. But I think this really is a national problem, and although I have some ideas for how individuals can better manage their economic circumstances, I really think that we have to address this as a society.
Again, the number to call if you want to join this conversation with a question for our guest, Jacob Hacker, 503-231-8187. I understand we have Joe from Portland on the line. Welcome to Labor Radio.
Yes, hello. Sir, I was born in 1935, and I didn't realize until a couple of years ago when they were attacking the Social Security system that the Social Security system was put into reality in 1935, whatever. And that's not very long. And here they're trying to take it down. My concern is, as an older person, most people in this fast pace of life and instant expectations, with your important knowledge and information, how can you reach people in different walks of life when everybody's in this fast, instant way of being every day? Anyway, I will listen. Thank you for your book.
Thanks for your call.
Well, thanks very much. And, 1935 was, a great depression and a dark day in our economy. But what was interesting is that people who were in positions of leadership recognized that this was a reason to put in place new nation-spanning institutions of social protection. And those institutions were built up in the subsequent years to provide security for millions of Americans. But today we're seeing that system being torn apart even as people are under greater economic stress. So we need to, I think, reclaim some of the vision that was there during the Great Depression. So what can we do? I think that one difference between the Great Depression and today, obviously, is that the economic instabilities that families are facing are much more a private matter. Our overall economy seems to be doing pretty well, and yet millions of Americans don't have health insurance. People are losing their jobs. But that is often experienced as a private problem, not a problem for our society as a whole. I think we're seeing a bit of a change. The economy has been good on paper for several years, but voters have said they're very dissatisfied with it. And at the same time, we're seeing a political reaction against this extreme right-wing ideology with the defeat of President Bush's proposal to privatize Social Security, with the recent gains that Democrats have made at the polls. And so I'm a bit more hopeful than I might have been otherwise. I've been taking this message to voters. I've been taking this message to labor unions. I've been taking this message to the media. And I think it's beginning to break through. I think there are others who are sounding the call. And it is not a problem for other people to fix. It's a problem for all of us because more and more the great risk shift has reached into all of our lives. And so what I say at the end of the book is that this isn't their problem, that's out there. This is our problem, and it's our problem to fix. And I want people to get out there and start fighting to fix it.
Jacob Hacker, it's a pleasure to have you tonight on Labor Radio.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Don. It was a real pleasure.
We've been talking with Jacob Hacker, professor at Yale University, and actually a Portland native, who will be speaking tonight again at 7:30 p.m. at Powell's Books on Hawthorne about his book, The Great Risk Shift. Check that out. Up just ahead, we have Kari Chisholm is going to be joining us. He's the founder of the blog BlueOregon.com and a commentator on politics. We'll be talking about what's at stake in the November 2006 election for working people. Stay tuned for that. But now I'd like to once again welcome back to the program Bill and Kevin. Are you with us?
Yes.
We're right here. And if you'd like to support KBOO and get a copy of this fine book by Jacob Hacker, The Great Risk Shift, The Assault on American Jobs, Families, Healthcare, and Retirement, and How You Can Fight Back, give us a call at 503-232-8818. And for a $60 minimum pledge, Jacob will be happy to give you a copy of this book. He's brought some to the station with them. Just give us a call, 503-232-8818, or?
Well, you could call 1-877-500-5266. That's our toll-free number for folks who are not in the 503 area code. And don't forget that $60 can be done at $5 a month, so it's even easier. And also, I want to repeat the other gift, thank you gift that we have for $120 minimum pledge or $10 a month, also quite easy to do. That was the 2 hours of electrical work by a union electrician. That's brought to us by Westside Electric and Local 48 of the IBEW, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. And thank you very much to them. We cannot do it without people like Westside Electric or Jacob Hacker or any of the many, many people who contribute the most wonderful and diverse thank you gifts that we then pass on to you. And we cannot do it without you giving us something to thank you for. And that's when you call 503, like that, 232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266 and join or up your pledge. You know, say you have a $5 a month, a $60 a year electronic funds transfer. Well, try making it $6 a month or $7 even. You know, it's just a little bit more. Maybe you've gotten a raise over the last year since you started. Well, let's share and let's be part of the community that shares the information, shares the music, and has a devotion to encouraging that in everyone who listens.
And you can do that by calling 503-232-8818 or outside the Portland metropolitan area, 1-877-500-5266. You know, Jacob was talking about how the web of social connections in this country have been broken. But here at KBOO, we keep that web together. And we had a caller call up Jacob and ask him, how can you reach people about this great book of his? And he's doing it tonight. And he's doing it because KBOO cares about the community. So we give a voice to the labor community. We've been great news in public affairs, but we cannot do that without your help. So give us a call, 503-232-8818. Let Jacob and Don both know that you enjoy the stuff they put over the airwaves tonight, and let's keep this little radio station humming.
Another thing that you can we can give you as a thank you gift is seeing Al Gore tomorrow evening. That's the 24th of October at 8 p.m., the Theater of the Clouds at the Rose Quarter. We have a pair of tickets for a $150 minimum pledge. Now, that sounds like a chunk of change, but what is it? Does it say what $150 is in that little list there?
Oh, it's pretty cheap. It's about, you know, 40 cents a day, a little over $250 a week, something like that. You
okay,
know?
That's not so bad, you know. And once again, if you've got, if you're making in the neighborhood of $15 an hour, that's an hourly wage a month, less than even. So give us a call, 503-232-8818, and you can see the man himself telling his story, 1-877-500-5266. Of course, if you're out of town, unless it's like across the river in Vancouver, you might not be able to take advantage of that. But we want people to avail themselves of the opportunities that our community gives to us to give to you. And so give us a call, make that pledge, and then you get to see Al Gore, you get the great new book by Jacob Hacker, and any way you look at it, when you tune in to 90.7 in Portland or the other frequencies for Corvallis and down in that area or out in Hood River and White Salmon, Washington, you're going to find stuff that you get nowhere else, and that's going to help you in your daily life. So remember the number, 503-232-8818. Give us a call. Make a pledge. Get a book. Go to see Al Gore. There are so many opportunities, and we want you to take advantage of them.
That's right. The great risk shift should not be shifted onto KBOO. Let's keep this little radio station humming. Call 503-232-8818 and give us a pledge. Show us you support Labor Radio. Show us you enjoy the kind of programming that we bring you every single week from 6 to 7 on Mondays. And do that minimum monthly pledge. You know, pay that week's or that hour's pay to KBOO and help keep this radio station going. 503-232-8818.
And I want to say one thing to Don. Wow, zeitgeist. Talk about a big word.
No kidding,
I love it.
I'll tell you.
How often do you hear zeitgeist on the radio, particularly in conversation?
He sets a high bar, doesn't
okay.
he?
Okay, 503-232-8818.
Okay, and we're back now. You're, of course, listening to Labor Radio. I'm your host, Don McIntosh. With me now in the studio is Kari Chisholm, who is actually the person who came up with a bumper sticker, Bill Sizemore Owes Me Money Too, and I think that's, you know, has never really gone out of style, and I think it may be more relevant than ever in this election.
I still see it around now and then. You know. Traveling around Southeast Portland.
And Kari is, of course, best known, probably at this point, as the founder of BlueOregon.com, a very very interesting blog, website, discussion water cooler for Oregon progressives.
We tend to think of it as the progressive water cooler. It's a place where folks talk about Oregon politics from a Democratic or progressive liberal point of view, the blue side of things.
Right, and that notorious splitting up of the map, there's the blue states and the red states, and you're hoping to keep Oregon a blue state, evidently.
Absolutely. Keep Oregon blue, keep Oregon green. Absolutely. You bet.
You're also, of course, with Mandate Media, and you do work trying to improve the ability of groups like the Oregon AFL-CIO to get their message out, am I right?
That's right. My day job, I have my own company. It's called Mandate Media. We do internet strategy for political campaigns as well as progressive organizations like the Oregon AFL-CIO and others. Yeah, sure.
I wanted to maybe challenge you a little bit tonight and kind of get into some of the nitty-gritty. I mean, one of the big excitements right now, I think, for anyone who considers himself progressive is looking at the U.S. House and the possibility that it may change hands and become a Democratic majority body of Congress. You said you didn't want to make any predictions, so I won't ask you to jinx anything. But let's suppose they do win office in a couple of weeks. What do you think is going to change in terms of, what working people can expect even for the next 2 years still?
Well, I think that's the big question. I think there's certainly going to be a lot of policy directions we're going to go. You know, a lot of folks in nationally, you see this on the talking heads on television, they'll be talking about, impeachment hearings and subpoena power and Iraq and Halliburton and all that stuff. And I'm actually hopeful that we'll do some of that, but that we'll really focus on a progressive agenda for change. I think a great model is actually to look at what happened in Montana in 2004. In Montana, George Bush got 61% of the vote, but a Democratic governor was elected, and the voters elected a Democratic legislature, the House and the Senate. 4 out of 5 statewide seats went to the Democrats. And in a very short period of time, they have a four-month legislative session. Governor Schweitzer, Brian Schweitzer of Montana, led the newly Democratic legislature in Montana through a very aggressive and very progressive policy agenda. We're talking about health care for children, we're talking about wind energy, talking about lobbyist reform, campaign finance reform. Pretty extraordinary set of accomplishments in a four-month legislative session. I keep imagining that when the Democrats take control in Congress, that they'll invite Brian Schweitzer there and he can teach them, lead them on a seminar of how do you create progressive change. I mean, if we win the House and the Senate, I want to see George Bush vetoing bills every single day of the week and twice on Sundays.
What kind of bills do you think he might be vetoing?
Well, I think one of the first things we'll see, probably in the first week, is a minimum wage bill. Perhaps even doing what Oregon has done, which is to have a minimum wage that's indexed to inflation so that we can take that issue off the table forever, as we have here in Oregon. It's nice to be able to run on minimum wage as a campaign issue, but it's even nicer to give everyone a raise on January 1st to help minimum wage employees keep up with inflation. I think we'd probably quickly see some stuff around lobbyist reform and campaign finance reform. That's clearly an issue that the Democrats are taking advantage of this year. We'll be talking about health care, I suspect we won't be able to get real health care reform until we also have a Democrat in the White House. But you certainly might be looking at children's health care. I think there's a whole range there's a progressive agenda that's been bottled up for over a dozen years, and we're ready to go.
What do you think about the Employee Free Choice Act? For those who don't know, that's a law that would change the labor laws of this country to make it a good deal easier for unionists to organize. Right now, the labor laws seem to be pretty stacked against unions.
They're certainly stacked against unions at the federal level. Certainly, there are some states that are more friendly and other states that are less friendly, particularly in the South, a lot of really unfriendly states. What we're going to be talking about here is a Democratic Congress and a Republican, a very right-wing Republican in the White House. A guy who's going to be pretty upset that he no longer has the levers of power. So we're going to be talking about bills that we're going to advance to the White House that they're going to have to veto. And they're going to veto it, and when they do, the American people will see a real policy difference. People used to say there was no difference between the Democrats and Republicans. I think ever since 2000, we've seen that there really is a big, big difference between the Democrats and Republicans. It'll be about the Democrats trying to push an agenda that makes it clear that there are distinctions. The Democrats are fighting for working people, and force the Republicans to show their true colors and veto stuff.
I do think that there's been, I'm sure you would acknowledge this, a tremendous disaffection, I think, particularly among blue-collar workers, union members even, towards the Democratic Party, and the feeling like that the party doesn't represent working people, as you say, quite as it did. I mean, the party, maybe a third of the folks in Congress who are Democrats are free traders. They believe in these sort of corporate written trade agreements that workers believe are really selling out their jobs. And there's just a whole range of issues where, whether it's Democrats getting big money contributions from the same sources, there's just this impression that the Democrats are, too similar to the Republicans. We had on the show last week, we had Andy Stern, who's the head of SEIU, who made exactly that critique. It wasn't so much that that Kansans were the problem. The problem was, in his view, that Democrats were the problem, that they didn't really authentically represent working people reliably enough for working people to realize that. Do you think that's changing at all?
Sure. I think it's absolutely changing. We've seen for years Democrats try and win elections by being Republican-lite. Trying to chase the same corporate donors and do the same things that Republicans do, just not as bad. But what you're seeing around the country is a large number of candidates who are running successfully in tough places, not as wishy-washy middle-road folks, but as strong progressives. Montana is not the only example, with Governor Schweitzer there, who outpolled John Kerry by 20 points, running as a strong progressive. But we're seeing it this year, too, in Montana, where John Tester is going against Conrad Burns. You're seeing it in places like Missouri, where Claire McCaskill is running as a good progressive. You're seeing it throughout the country, even in places like Rhode Island, where Sheldon Whitehouse is running against the most liberal Republican of them all, Lincoln Chafee. He's going to beat him by being a real progressive. Sure, there are some places like, say, Pennsylvania, where Bob Casey, he's a state treasurer, pretty conservative Democrat, certainly a pro-life Democrat, is doing very well. He's up by 20 points now against Rick Santorum. It's pretty hard for anybody to lose to Rick Santorum these days. There are still some conservative Democrats out there. But I think what you're seeing is the rise of the progressive caucus. Bernie Sanders is going to take a Senate seat out of Vermont. That's going to be enormous to have a socialist in Congress, to pull things to the left. I think we're seeing the rise of the confidence of Democrats to be progressive, to stand for something, to fight for real values. I think that's what we're seeing a change, and that's one thing that's different between an insurgency movement like we've been in for the last 12 years, certainly the last 6 years anyway, and sort of a stay-the-course group in power that we had from 1952 until 1994.
Although, I also want to be fair and say that even at the worst, there were always some differences that were pretty bottom line, and the minimum wage, as you mentioned, is one of them. And I'm maybe going off from the prophecy into fantasy role here, but I wonder how difficult it might actually be for a President Bush in the next 2 years to veto an up or down minimum wage increase. I mean, we're not talking about like this sort of muddy the water thing that the Republicans have had in Congress. They attach minimum wage to all sorts of difficult things that aren't really related and that give people heartburn who might have to vote for or against it. But if you just had a straight up or down, do you think that Bush could really veto such a thing?
I don't know. Again, we're heading into fantasy land. I know one of two things will happen. Either he'll sign it, and we'll get a policy change, or he'll veto it, and the world will come crashing down around his ears. And that's, either way, I'll take it. I think the other thing that's going on here is that for many years, Democrats were so wishy-washy on the economic stuff, but very strong on the social stuff. Democrats were very strongly pro-choice. In many cases, pretty good on gay rights, though not all of them. In many cases, pretty good on gun control, but not all of them. Suddenly, the only thing that we were standing up strongly for were the right-wing boogeymen of gays, guns, and God. And because we were so wishy-washy on the economic progressive issues, well, Democrats have figured this out, and they're not going to let the Republicans sort of put them in the box of being social liberals and nothing else. We're going to be good, strong economic liberals, I think, in this next Congress, assuming, of course, we take it back.
I want to give our listeners a chance. Again, of course, you're listening to Labor Radio. I'm Don McIntosh, your host and guest tonight, talking about politics. Is Kari Chisholm, the founder of the blog Blue Oregon, among other things, blueoregon.com. Yes. The number to call if you want to join our conversation with the quick comment or question is 503-231-8187. And I want to maybe see if we could focus on now, obviously, you are very much a political science in the active mode. Oregon, also, there's a lot of things on the ballot, both candidates and ballot measures. What do you think are the top issues for, Oregon as working people? Maybe not necessarily the social hot-button issues, but what are the economic issues that are going to matter, really might change the quality of life in Oregon?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. You've got to, of course, look at the ballot measures, and measures 41 and 48 are an absolute disaster for all Oregonians, including working people.
And remind listeners of what those two are.
Measures 41 and 48 are both right-wing anti-tax measures. 41 is a fairly complicated adjustment to the tax code. You get these deductions and credits, and you do some hocus-pocus, and your taxes go down. Measure 48 is the Oregon version of the Colorado Tabor spending trap that even in Colorado, even the Republicans are opposed to now because it's been such a disaster in Colorado. Measures 41 and 48 are just the latest chapter in the fight by anti-tax conservatives to shift the tax burden away from corporations, away from the wealthy, and toward middle class and working class people in Oregon, to reduce the size of government, to reduce the government's ability to provide education, other services to folks. So 41-48 are a big disaster, certainly. There's, of course, also the fight for the Oregon legislature and the governor's mansion as well.
I'll ask you, you don't have to answer. What do you think the odds are that the Oregon House is going to change hands?
I would say the odds are very good, actually, at this point. I just saw some...
So you broke your vow. You said you weren't going to make any predictions.
I'm willing to make predictions about it in general. I saw some polling today, and I won't get into the numbers, but it's looking very good. Right now, the Democrats control 27 seats, Republicans 33. 30-30 would be tied. We need to get to 31 in order to control the legislature. There's about five seats that are in play. If the Democrats win all five, we'll be at 32. If we win four out of five, we'll be at 31. If we win three out of five, all hell's going to break loose, and we'll be at 30-30. The odds are looking very good that we're going to pick up four out of five and win back the Oregon House.
We're talking with Kari Chisholm, who came up with a bumper sticker, Bill Sizemore owes me money, too. I want to talk about Bill Sizemore in just a second. But now, once again, I want to, this is a special time of the year, and I want to bring back to the show Bill and Kevin, who will talk about how you can make media like this possible.
Well, we are happy to talk about that. And, one of the things I was thinking when you were talking with Jacob Hacker, and which I'm reminded of again talking about these tax measures, is that those folks want to privatize everything that is public so that they don't have to pay. It's really a way of justifying inherent selfishness. And KBOO represents everything that they don't. It is inherent sharing. That's what KBOO is about. And you can share your wealth with us as we share a wealth of information with you. And all you need to do is call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. And speaking of sharing, we're picking up the cost of that phone call for you folks who would otherwise have to make a long-distance call.
And we'd like to thank We've got three new members who are listening to Labor Radio tonight. We love new members.
Yay.
There was Barbara from Portland, Matthew from Clackamas, and Kurt from Welch's, and Shelda from Portland renewed her. And folks, we are so close. We have a $360 goal, and we've raised $300 so far.
And you
far.
Know what that means? That means one person with $5 a month. So, you know, if you were making $5 an hour under minimum wage, and you gave your 1 hour of your wages a month to KBOO, we would do it. And a minimum pledge, a minimum minimum wage pledge of $7.50 an hour, we'd be over. Come on, let's get on it. 503-232-8818.
Or 1-877-500-5266. Let's give this web of social connections we call KBOO on the air. Let's keep it on the air. Let's show some respect for Don's show by calling 503-232-8818. Here at KBOO, we are into upward mobility. So if you join KBOO today, if you're a new member, you can go from the working class to the owning class, because when you join KBOO, you become an owner of this radio station. You get to vote. You get to choose what you want to listen to. 503-232-8818. Join us, the owners of KBOO.
Change the zeitgeist, if I may use that word. 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266. Those are the phone numbers that you can call and become a KBOO member, or renew your membership, or if you have been doing, say, the $5 a month, $60 a year electronic funds transfer, consider making it $6 a month, or $7 even. If you are a high-paid professional and are pulling in, say you're a lawyer charging $200, $300 an hour for your services, how about $200 or $300 once a month to KBOO? You can afford it. We know that. And all you have to do is pick up the phone. You know, if you're out of town, you're not even paying for the phone call. That ought to appeal to that lawyerly heart of yours. 1-877-500-5266. The local phone, 503-232-8818. You know what? You join us and you're part of a community. It is special. It is unlike anything else you're going to be doing.
And we got goodies, folks. We got goodies. The book, The Great Wrist Shift, by Jacob Hacker, who was in here for the first half hour of Don's show, for a $60 minimum pledge. We can get that to you in the mail. Or we still have the 2 hours of electrical work by a union electrician for a $120 minimum pledge. What a sweet deal that is. Donated by Westside Electric and local 48 of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You're never going to find an electrician to come into your house for $120, and you can get KBOO, your donation, and bring that home for yourself and feel good about it. So give us a call, 503-232-8818, or
1-877-500-5266. Those are the numbers that get you to us and make that connection that we all want to make, the connection that becomes part of a community of like-minded individuals. And not when I say like-minded, I don't mean like cookie-cutter like. I mean diverse, but thinking about one another, helping each other, doing the right thing. So let's get back to Don and have him tell us more about the right thing.
Okay, thanks. Don McIntosh here again, your host for Labor Radio this evening, and with me in the studio is Kari Chisholm. We did have a caller during the break who asked a question about voting machines, and I think that's a very interesting fear, particularly I think in other parts of the country where, you know, there's sort of an electronic blip. Who knows how something might have come about. Kari and I were talking about it, and we're lucky, I guess, in Oregon that we don't really have that electronic voting machine problem as far as I know.
We vote by mail here in Oregon. It's a great system. Actually, Senator Wyden actually just proposed a bill in Congress to put aside $110 million in grants to encourage other states to do away with their voting machines and go to the Oregon vote-by-mail system, which would be a great improvement, because there's a paper trail, easily verifiable. Everyone has, you know, two or three weeks to vote. Vote by mail is a much better deal than electronic voting.
And for what it's worth, you know, those who maybe regular listeners of the show may know, I'm a reporter for the Northwest Labor Press, which is a union newspaper. And at the moment, I'm actually working on a story, which will be in our next issue, that's November 1st issue, and about how we know that our vote is actually counted. I'm going to be talking to some folks at the Multnomah County Elections and a few other sort of electoral experts about how we know. It's something I think we've tended to take on faith, and then recently in Ohio and in Florida, you know, we're not so sure we should be taking it on faith. Maybe we better get informed about how it's done. But I think that hopefully I will find that it is legit here in Oregon. Kari, I wanted to talk with you also about maybe some of the hot races. Of course, a lot of people are focusing on the governor's race right now, and you know, Governor Kulongoski comes in for particular attention by unions. They're wildly in support of him right now, and really, really want to see him elected and not Ron Saxton. Of course, a few months ago, they were pretty unhappy with him. You want to talk about that?
Well, you know, Ron Saxton is a $400 an hour corporate attorney. He represents oil and gas companies, many of them in Alaska. We don't have many oil and gas companies here in Oregon. But he's basically an oil and gas attorney from downtown, $400 an hour. And the question really for working people is that the kind of guy that represents your values and ought to belong in the governor's mansion making decisions? Or would you rather have Ted Kulongoski, a guy who was himself a union truck driver and steel worker, a Marine, who put himself through college and law school, grew up an orphan. I think when you're talking about basic values, I think it's clear what kind of values that Ted Kulongoski has and what kind that Ron Saxton has.
So basically, at this point, though, the corporate lawyer versus the labor lawyer.
Basically, we're talking about a corporate lawyer versus the labor lawyer. Sure. Yeah, that's the story. I think you're also talking about a guy, Governor Kulongoski, who has long experience in being a manager in state government. Ron Saxton's only experience is 4 years on the Portland School Board, where he ran unopposed, by the way, and where he was a complete disaster, was one of the guys who were responsible for bringing in Steve Goldschmidt as the HR director, which was opposed heavily by the Portland Teachers Union, as well as he's the guy who negotiated and approved all his golden parishes for administrators. It's pretty clear where Ron Saxton's values and priorities lie.
Yeah, it was last week. I saw a very good speech by him. Actually, a candidate's gone wild. He became a little boy from Eugene, and it was very, very entertaining.
Absolutely hilarious.
But I mean, the guy is ducking some appearances like that. Maybe that can be excused. He didn't actually seek endorsement from labor unions, and I don't know if that was just he assumed that he wouldn't get it. But I mean, usually there's, you might give a nod to say, well, maybe they have something in common. I mean, there are other Republican candidates for governor, for example, Kevin Mannix, who actually did go to unions and ask for their endorsement. He didn't get it, but you sort of have to.
You at least have the conversation.
But I think that's sort of an indicator, probably for union folks, that Saxton's not going to be their friend in office if he didn't even make that contact.
In the past in Oregon, we've had a lot of candidates on the Republican side who've run for governor, mostly on social issues. Kevin Mannix in particular, lock them up, hate the gays, and take away your right to choose. Ron Saxton's actually pretty moderate on some of those social issues. So that makes you wonder, why is he running and why are Republicans supporting him so strongly? Well, it turns out he's entirely a right-wing economic conservative, an anti-union, anti-working people, anti-tax, anti-government services, conservative. That's the agenda. Kevin Mannix would have come in, he'd have spent a lot of time worrying about gay people and guns and criminals. We know Ron Saxton's not going to do that. He's going to focus like a laser beam on taking away the rights of working people.
Now, I want to have full disclosure here to you. You have actually done some work for the Kulongoski campaign.
Yeah, I built Ted Kulongoski's website. I also built SaxtonWatch.com, which is a great site to learn about all the bad things about Ron Saxton.
But today we're talking about Kari Chisholm's opinions here, and in no way were you influenced by that cash.
That's right. My arrangement with them is I get to talk. My opinions are my own. I don't get them approved by anybody. And I just
wanted to make that clear in case
I'm just a loudmouth.
Throw darts. That's right. What about the Oregon House and Senate? Are there some close races? Let's say you're sort of a progressive, maybe oriented towards workers' rights. That the idea that working people ought to have their due. What are some races people might consider looking at?
Well, again, it's critical to take back the Oregon House. We currently have the state Senate, but it's critical to take back the Oregon House. Get rid of the leadership of Karen Minnis and Wayne Scott. The big races. The five big races in the Oregon House, all of them are held by Republicans right now. And if we win four out of five, we take back control. One is the race against Karen Minnis out in Gresham. Rob Brading is running the second time. Close, tough race. It's going to be the most expensive race in Oregon history.
Which I want to say, there's something really odd about that, which is Karen Minnis has been endorsed by some unions, and they've been giving her money. You're surely aware of that.
Yeah, it's very disturbing and very strange.
Yeah.
Especially given how anti-union she has been.
Well, in fact, she actually had an ad I saw in the Oregonian. I didn't see the ad, but that was bashing her opponent for taking money from unions, and, well, hey, she's taking money for some as well. So there's got to be some explaining to do.
Hypocrisy knows no bounds. There are two races where the Democratic candidates, both named Edwards. One is David Edwards. He's running in the open seat currently held by Derek Kitts. That's out in Washington County. And the other is Chris Edwards. He's running against incumbent Debbie Farr. That's down in Lane County, sort of northern part of Eugene and Junction City area. Both of them are running very strong campaigns. Great shot at taking him over. There's a district in Salem where Brian Clem is the Democrat running against incumbent Billy Dalto. Another tough race. Billy Dalto's been, in particular, had a lot of ethical questions to him. And the last race I'd point out is down in Newport, Lincoln City area. That's Jean Cowan making her second run. She's a county commissioner down there against incumbent Representative Alan Brown, who you may remember, a lot of anti-worker kind of stuff coming out of his office.
Kari Chisholm, you've been a guest on this program before. I want to say thanks for coming back. Also, I want to, if you maybe know the website, it just kind of was announced today that there's sort of a lot of progressive groups are pooling their resources now in terms of the get out the vote efforts, the phone banking and canvassing and that kind of thing. There's a website you can go to. I think ouroregon.com, believe it or not, which I think you may have designed, has a thing you can plug in and see all the different places you can go, maybe, and volunteer if you want to do
that. There are lots of different opportunities from ouroregon.org, which is a group organizing around the ballot measures. There's onwardoregon.org, which is sort of a move on for Oregon. There's, of course, the site I run, blueoregon.com, where we're talking about all the issues and pointing people in different directions. And then, of course, there's the Democratic Party of Oregon, dpo.org.
Great. Kari Chisholm, once again, thanks for being on. That's about all the time we've got. I want to thank you for listening to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. Again, I'm Don McIntosh. I'd like to thank our engineer, Ben Levine, and our guests. We hope you'll tune in again the following Monday at 6 p.m. for Labor Radio, when the topic is again the 2006 election. We'll have hosts Lane Ponce and Tim Flanagan talking with some of Oregon's top labor leaders, Tom Chamberlain of the Oregon AFL-CIO and Leslie Frayne of the state's largest public employees union, I guess except for the teachers union, talking about some close races and priority ballot measure campaigns. And I hope you'll stay tuned now for Time Sound, a program of soul music with host Kevin Berry.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from SEIU Local 503 OPEU, whose mission is to improve the quality of life through worker empowerment and a progressive labor movement, and whose members deliver quality public services to Oregonians every day. And also by Ironworkers, Shopmen's Local 516, and the Pacific Northwest Ironworkers District Council, proudly fighting to preserve living wage jobs and resisting their outsourcing. Information at 503-257-4743.